The following program is a special presentation of the Voice of America. This is the Voice of America. Press Conference USA, usually heard at this time, will not be broadcast today in order that we may bring you a special program, Eagle on the Moon.
The date was December 6, 1957. The man speaking, a reporter for NBC News. And this is how and where it all began, with a rocket attempting to orbit the first American artificial Earth satellite.
Here she goes, flame is shooting out from under the bottom of it, and a huge, huge ball of fire rising up perhaps 100 feet. And as yet the missile has not yet cleared the ground. I do not see it taking off. Apparently we've had some kind of difficulty on the pad. We have no explanation for what the difficulty may be. The only assumption we can make at this time is that some sort of last-minute trouble has occurred and has spelled a failure for this effort that has been anticipated for so long.
America had entered the space age, not with a bang, but with a whimper. It was much more than just a rocket blowing up on a launch pad. It was a crushing blow to American pride, a slap in the face of American technology, a moment of doubt in this nation's capability to venture into space.
Houston, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
And this is astronaut Neil Armstrong speaking from the moon on the 20th of July, 1969. 12 years of national effort, the fuel of many men's imagination, and the skills of 400,000 technicians served as a bridge between these 2 days, the day when American space technology stood at its lowest point, and the day when it reached its peak as the Eagle landed on the moon.
Eagle on the Moon, a special broadcast recounting the highlights of Apollo 11, man's first venture to another celestial body. Reporting is VOA correspondent Harry Monroe.
The goal was set by one president.
This nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him.
Reasserted by another.
We must assure our preeminence in the peaceful exploration of outer space, focusing on an expedition to the moon in this decade, in cooperation with other.
And broadened by a third.
As we explore the reaches of space, let us go to the new worlds together. Not as new worlds to be conquered, but as a new adventure to be shared.
The challenge was set forth by John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Reasserted by Lyndon Baines Johnson and broadened by Richard Nixon. And it was met by three men.
Neil Armstrong, Commander, Apollo 11.
Michael Collins, Command Module Pilot, Apollo 11.
Edwin E. Aldrin, Jr., Lunar Module Pilot, Apollo 11.
But the dream belongs to all mankind and was born when history was young.
The very conception of interplanetary travel was, of course, impossible until it was realized that there were other planets.
Arthur C. Clarke, twice chairman of the British Interplanetary Society and a writer of science, fact, and fiction.
To the ancients, therefore, the idea of interplanetary travel in the literal sense was not merely fantastic, it was meaningless. However, although the stars and planets were simply dimensionless points of light, the sun and moon were obviously in a different class. Anyone could see that they had appreciable size, and the moon had markings on its face which might well be interpreted as continents and seas. It was not surprising, therefore, that many of the Greek philosophers believed that the moon really was a world, and it was natural that men should write stories about traveling to that mysterious and romantic world.
The first known story about a voyage to the moon was written by Lucian of Samos, who lived in the 2nd century of the Christian era. Its title was True History, and its hero was taken to the moon in a waterspout which caught up his ship when he was sailing beyond the Pillars of Hercules. Over the centuries, there were other books dealing with journeys to the moon. Then, in 1865, came the book which would become the classic of the genre, From Earth to the Moon, by Jules Verne.
Verne did not take the easy way out and invent, as so many writers before and since have done, some mysterious method of propulsion or a substance which would defy gravity. He knew that if a body could be projected away from the Earth at a sufficient speed, it would reach the moon. So he simply built an enormous gun and fired his heroes from it in a specially equipped projectile.
Through an amazing coincidence, Jules Verne chose as the locale from where his 3 space travelers left for the moon a small town in Florida, where 5 million people came to witness man's first attempt to journey to another celestial body.
This is VOA correspondent Rhett Turner at Cape Kennedy, Florida.
On the 16th of July, 1969, one man's imagination blended with reality.
I'm standing about 5 kilometers from the point where a Saturn V rocket stands bathed in a wreath of brilliant light. Atop the rocket, inside the Apollo spacecraft, named Columbia, after Jules Verne's spacecraft, are the first men who will attempt to land on the moon. The beaches, fields, and highways surrounding the Cape Kennedy Space Center bustle with people, an estimated crowd of several hundred thousand, seeking the best vantage points to witness the launch of the astronauts. It looks as if Jules Verne's imagination had come to life.
This is Apollo Saturn Launch Control. We've just passed the 31-minute mark in our count. Well, T-minus 30 minutes, 52 seconds and counting, aiming toward our planned liftoff time of 32 minutes past the hour, the start of our launch window on this mission to land men on the moon. The countdown is still proceeding very satisfactorily at this time. We've just got by an important test with the launch vehicle, checking out the various batteries in the 3 stages and instrument unit of the Saturn V.
The Saturn V is about 121 meters tall with the Apollo spacecraft in place.
This is John Hammersmith, Senior Systems Engineer, Manned Spaceflight Program.
It generates enough thrust to place a 125-ton payload into a 105 nautical mile circular Earth orbit, or it can boost a smaller payload to the vicinity of any planet in the solar system.
This is Apollo Saturn Launch Control. We've just passed the 26-minute mark, and the count still proceeding very satisfactorily. At this time, the spacecraft test conductor Skip Chauvin working with astronaut Buzz Aldrin in the middle seat, covering the final pressurization of the reaction control system for the spacecraft.
The Apollo spacecraft is a 3-man spacecraft as compared to the 2-man
John Healy of North American Rockwell, builders of the Apollo spacecraft.
The overall dimensions are about 12 foot by 13 foot in physical size. The volume of space available inside the spacecraft itself allows the spacecraft to be so arranged that the astronauts can stand up in the spacecraft. We can maneuver our couches in such a way that we actually have the capability for more than one astronaut to be in a working position and or in a sleep position.
T-minus 10 minutes, 54 seconds on our countdown for Apollo 11. All still go at this time. The astronauts in the spacecraft busy again. The astronauts, the prime crew, were awakened at 4:15 a.m. Eastern Daylight as planned in their countdown, and proceeded to have a physical examination in which they were declared flight ready. The astronauts departed from their crew quarters after checking out their suits. They departed from the crew quarters at 6:27 a.m. and some 27 minutes later, 6:54 a.m., the commander, astronaut Neil Armstrong, was the first to board the spacecraft.
I'm from the state of Ohio, from Wapakoneta, small town of about 5,000 population. I've been flying for 20 years this year. Flew as a civilian for 3 years, in the Navy for 4 years, then as a test pilot for NACA and NASA for the last 11 years.
He was followed about 5 minutes later by Mike Collins.
I was born in Rome, Italy. My father was stationed there in the American Army. I went to the test pilot school at Edwards, and I was a test pilot there for a couple of years and went back again to what was then called the Aerospace Research Pilot Course, and then following that came to work for NASA.
And finally, Buzz Aldrin, the man who's sitting in the middle seat during liftoff, was the third astronaut to come aboard.
I attended public schools in my hometown of Montclair, New Jersey, received an appointment to the United States Military Academy at West Point. I was commissioned in the Air Force in 1959, applied for admission into Massachusetts Institute of Technology to study astronautics in greater depth, leading toward a Doctor of Science degree.
5 minutes, 52 seconds and counting. The lunar module, which has been rather inactive during these latter phases of the count, also is going on internal power at this time on the two batteries in the ascent stage and the four batteries of the descent stage.
The lunar module is unique inasmuch as it has been designed solely to land on a lunar terrain, operate outside the atmosphere.
Aerospace engineer Ed Smith of NASA.
It initially weighs approximately 33,700 pounds at separation. It will weigh about 16,500 pounds at landing, and it will weigh about 5,000 pounds at rendezvous and docking. There are two stations with two engines aboard, the descent stage with this associated descent engine, which has a throttleable 10,000-pound thrust engine, the ascent stage with its non-throttleable 3,500-pound engine.
The lunar module in Apollo 11, of course, when it separates from the command module in lunar orbit, will have the call sign Eagle. The command module call sign, once the two vehicles separate, will be Columbia. Both Columbia and Eagle are go at this time.
Around the world, a communications network of unprecedented sophistication and speed was also in the final stages of its preparations. From the moment Apollo 11 was underway, it would electronically shrink the enormous distance separating tracking stations on Earth and the moon-bound ship to the scale and closeness of a telephone conversation between two people living in the same town.
The manned flight network and the communication system that tie the stations of this network together, it's made up of 17 ground stations, four ships, and eight aircraft.
Osro M. Covington, Assistant Director for Manned Flight Support, Goddard Space Flight Center.
We'll be monitoring everything from the astronauts' aeromedical data to the temperature at various points in the spacecraft, the fuel reserves aboard the spacecraft, and in addition, keeping up pretty continuously with the status of the onboard digital computer.
T-minus 30 seconds and counting. Astronauts report it feels good. T-minus 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower cleared.
We got a roll program.
Neil Armstrong reporting the roll and pitch program, which puts Apollo 11 on a proper heading.
For a last instant, the gleaming body of the rocket shone against the Florida sky. Then came the boiling clouds of smoke. Thunder shook the earth, and Apollo 11 began to move. A painfully slow and perfectly straight ascent toward the blue sky. Inside the spacecraft, none of the majesty of the moment was visible. A myriad of small green lights flickered across the instrument panel like a flight of fireflies. Pointers rose mutely under the glass dials, advising the three spacemen how the equipment was performing. Outside, ignition came with a roar so powerful that people standing 30 or 40 kilometers away could feel it in the ground under their feet. To the space travelers in their little craft, it was the thunder of a million drums. Only a minute later, they were thrust out of the roar abruptly. In the same way, and for the same reason that lightning leaves its thunder behind, they were now traveling faster than sound. Apollo 11 was on its way to the moon. Three explorers from the planet Earth were taking the banner of discovery to the celestial body nearest their own. They took along the dreams of Jules Verne of France and H.G. Wells of Britain, the courage of Galileo Galilei of Italy, the visions of Johannes Kepler of Germany, Hermann Oberth of Romania, and Konstantin Tsiolkovsky of Russia, the imagination of Robert H. Goddard, the daring of John F. Kennedy, and the quiet dedication of 400,000 men and women. They also took along the gold medals awarded to 5 men who gave their lives in the conquest of space: Virgil Grissom, Edward White, and Roger Chaffee of the United States, Yuri Gagarin and Vladimir Komarov of the Soviet Union. 2.5 hours after it left Launch Complex 39 at Cape Kennedy, Apollo 11 leapt from its Earth orbit and into the journey that would take the 3 spacemen to the moon.
Approximately 3 days after leaving the launch pad at the Kennedy Spacecraft Center,
Mission Director George Hage,
the astronauts will burn their service propulsion rocket engine again, this time behind the moon, and will inject the spacecraft, the dock spacecraft, into a 60 by 170 mile nautical mile orbit. After determining that systems are in a go configuration, the lunar module will separate from the command and service module.
Hello, Eagle Houston, we're standing by, over.
Roger, Eagle, time dot.
Roger, how does it look?
Eagle has wings.
And will perform a small burn, which will take the lunar module down to an altitude of about 50,000 feet above the lunar surface.
Our radar checks indicate 50,000 foot barrel in. Our visual altitude checks are setting it out at about 53,000.
Roger, copy.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth.
Coming up on 1 minute to ignition. Current altitude about 46,000 feet, continuing to descend.
Our hopes for peace and security, our obligations to ourselves as well as others, all require us to make this effort.
We're now in the approach phase, everything looking good. Altitude 5,200 feet.
Manual attitude control is good.
Roger, copy.
Altitude 4,200.
Houston, you're a go for landing, over.
We set sail on this new sea because there is new knowledge to be gained and new rights to be won, and they must be won and used for the progress of all people.
60 seconds.
Lights on. Down 2.5. Forward. Forward. 30 feet down, 2.5. Picking up some dust. 30 feet, 2.5 down. Straight shadow. 4 forward. 4 forward, drifting to the right a little. 1.5.
But why, some say, the moon? Why choose this as our goal? And they may well ask, why climb the highest mountain? Why, 35 years ago, fly the Atlantic? We choose to go to the moon.
30 seconds.
Forward, just contact light. Okay, engine stop. APA at a descent. Mode control, both auto, descent engine command override off. Engine arm off. 413 is in.
We copy you down, Eagle.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You're looking good here.
Very smooth touchdown.
The first thing the guys will do when they get to the lunar surface is get ready to launch again.
George Lowe, manager, Apollo Spacecraft, Manned Spacecraft Center.
They'll put themselves in a position so that in the event of any kind of an emergency, they could launch again as quickly as possible.
That's what the plan said, but that's not what the first Earth travelers to reach the moon did, because they're human. The first thing they did was to look out the window of their spacecraft and tell all who were listening what the moon looks like when you're standing on its surface.
It looks like a collection of just about every variety of shape, angularity, granularity, but every variety of rock you could find. The color is, it varies pretty much depending on how you're looking. There doesn't appear to be too much of a general color at all.
And how did they find the low gravity on the moon?
I don't think we notice any difficulty at all in adapting to 1/6 G. It seems immediately natural to move in this environment.
A few short hours after the Eagle landed on the moon, the two men who made the journey on board were ready to take the longest step any man had ever taken. They took it. First one, Neil Armstrong, then the other, Edwin Aldrin, in full view of millions and millions of people watching on television.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
The first words uttered by a man as he set foot on the surface of the moon. One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. It was taken at 56 minutes past the hour of 2, Greenwich Mean Time, on the 21st day of July, 1969.
Dark here in the shadow and a little hard for me to see that I have good footing. I'll work my way over into the sunlight here without looking directly into the sun.
Neil Armstrong was followed 20 minutes later by Edwin Aldrin, and for the next 2 hours, like curious boys at a frog pond, they strolled and jumped on the lunar surface, dug their feet into its gray granules, and like tourists the world over, took pictures of themselves. In full view of millions of mesmerized people, they executed a fantastic ballet with movements that seemed to come from a science fiction movie of yesteryear, all the while explaining to the Earthlings they had left behind and who were watching what they were doing.
So-called kangaroo hop does work, but it seems like your forward stability is not quite as good as it is in the conventional, more conventional, one foot after another.
Then they started to accomplish the mission for which they had come to the moon, gathering samples for man's first collection of moon rocks, unpacking the scientific equipment they would leave behind. Then a phone call from the President of the United States.
Hello, Neil and Buzz. I'm talking to you from the Oval Room at the White House. And this certainly has to be the most historic telephone call ever made. For one priceless moment in the whole history of man, all the people on this earth are truly one. One in their pride in what you have done, and one in our prayers that you will return safely to Earth.
Two hours, 13 minutes, and 32 seconds after Neil Armstrong set foot on the surface of the moon, the astronauts were back inside their craft and the hatch was closed. Around the Eagle, there were several mementos of man's first visit to the moon. The shoulder patches of the three American astronauts and the gold medals of the two Soviet cosmonauts who died in the conquest of space. An American flag and a small plaque.
Earth is two hemispheres, one showing each of the two hemispheres of Earth. Underneath it says, "Dear men from the planet Earth, first set foot upon the moon, July 1969 AD. It came in peace for all mankind. It has the crew members' signatures and signature of the President of the United States."
21 hours, 36 minutes, and 20 seconds after the first spacecraft from the planet Earth had landed on its nearest satellite, the Eagle stood ready to take its crew aloft again. As millions of people here on Earth held their breath, the Eagle's engine roared to life. And moments later, it was on its way, with one terse comment from its commander.
Very quiet ride.
A very quiet ride. It stayed quiet as the Eagle made its way back into the orbit of the moon, searched and found the command module in which Mike Collins had been waiting patiently for the last 24 hours, docked with it, and began the long journey home. The journey came to an end at 1600 hours, 49 minutes Greenwich Mean Time on Thursday, July 24th, 1969, in the waters of the Pacific Ocean, just like the journey undertaken a century ago by the three imaginary travelers of Jules Verne's novel, which today reads almost like the flight plan of Apollo 11. The three men from the planet Earth who had gone to the moon for all mankind came out of their spacecraft dressed in an unfamiliar uniform designed to avoid contamination of their fellow Earthlings by germs they may have brought back from the moon. In a matter of minutes, they were on board the aircraft carrier Hornet, but the now familiar welcome ceremony on the flight deck reserved for all returning astronauts did not take place. Instead, the three space travelers entered a mobile home where they would remain for 18 days in quarantine. But there was a short ceremony on the hangar deck, a ceremony during which they were welcomed back by the President of the United States.
Neil, Buzz, and Mike, I want you to know that I think I'm the luckiest man in the world. And I say this not only because I have the honor to be President of the United States, but particularly because I have the privilege of speaking for so many and welcoming you back to Earth. I was thinking, as you know, as you came down, and we knew it was a success, and it had only been 8 days, just a week, a long week, that this is the greatest week in the history of the world since the creation. Because as a result of what happened in this week, the world is bigger infinitely. And also, as a result of what you've done, the world's never been closer together before.
The journey of the Eagle is over. The challenge set forth by John Fitzgerald Kennedy, reasserted by Lyndon Baines Johnson, and broadened by Richard Nixon, has been met. The human spirit, as indefinable as faith or love, but as real as the moon, has swept man to another victory in his never-ending quest for accomplishing the impossible. For learning what no one knows, for traveling where no one has ever been. For one soaring moment in history, man has reached out into the universe to touch a future as fathomless as infinity. He began his newest quest with one small step, which helped mankind take a giant leap. He began, perhaps timidly, but certainly aware that this was a journey which had to be undertaken. For in the words of one who foresaw it, H.G. Wells, "For man, there is no rest and no ending. He must go on, conquest beyond conquest. And when he has conquered all the deeps of space and all the mysteries of time, still he will be but beginning."
You have heard Eagle on the Moon,
A special broadcast recounting the highlights of Apollo 11, man's first venture to another celestial body. This has been a presentation of The Voice of America.